Welcome back. If you aren't already following Naked, please take a minute to do so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Each follow means so much and it actually helps a lot. If you have more than just a minute, it would be absolutely incredible if you could leave a review and maybe even share an episode with a friend. I'm relatively new to the pod world, especially new to the things that are important in the podcasting world. And apparently reviews and follows are up there on the list of importance. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Welcome to Naked, where stories unfold. I'm your host, Janelle, a once former pastor's wife who exchanged small town living for a nomadic life. The unexpected change in our life led my husband and our four kids to traveling the world. From years of being rooted in our small town to the thrill of wandering the world, our story has been anything but ordinary. On our journeys, we've met amazing people, learned their way of life, and heard their unique stories, which has led me to understand the profound impact of shared experiences. In each episode, we explore moments of transformation, guided by one single question. Is there a time in your life when everything changed? We invite ordinary storytellers like yourself to share the often unexpected turns in life. So grab a seat and settle in. This is the Naked Podcast. Welcome back to Naked. Today is the 25th episode. And so in honor of doing that, I thought why not join my husband as we just celebrated our 25th anniversary. So today I'm delighted to have my husband join me in sharing a bit of our story. We were just kids getting married, 19 and 22, who eventually raised four amazing kids. And about 7 years ago, our life went upside down as we took on a crazy adventure that we never would have ever planned to do. But it came out of a really peculiar experience that led us on this journey that took us around the world. So today we're going to share a bit of that. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Boom, pop in the bag.
Take three.
Yeah.
Because the first one, incredible setting.
Yeah.
Beautiful room.
Beautiful
like
conversation.
Fireplace. The conversation was okay. I know you loved it, but I was like, well, it's all right.
Magic.
Because it took me a minute to settle in and like get back into that mode. But like the art and everything, it was like very country gentleman.
Yeah.
But like
speakeasy.
Yeah, it's really special. Nice. Really nice. But the mics didn't work.
No, because I didn't turn them on.
Well, I gave them to you, plugged them in, and said, check them. And then I didn't check them myself. So it's like, whatever. Doesn't matter.
I'm new.
It didn't work.
I'm new at these mics. And I should have, it should be one of my things I check off.
But I'm not. Didn't. And I should have known better. So I used to do this for a living.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, side gig, not living. But, yeah. And then part two was yesterday. It was like,
let's do
we
it.
Can't use that audio. I tried. I can't because the computer was like 20 feet away.
Yeah.
It was just an echoey room. So can't even use the audio. Can't fix it up. Nothing can be done.
No. Tried with great effort. And it just felt like we didn't have any muchiness to it. You know, I felt like the magic was missing. Like, okay, I really wanted to do an episode for our 25th, like as we're wrapping up, I guess starting now our 26th year, but wrapping up that end of our 25th year. And I was like, I'm coming up to my 25th episode. I would love to do something
I see what you're doing.
Okay, the connection. I would love to do something where we could connect the two. And so I was like, let's go somewhere else. Because like I say, when people come onto the podcast, I'm like, there's probably many times in your life when everything's changed.
Every day.
And yes, you say that every day.
Well, it is. It's like sliding doors. It just,
yeah.
Every decision sends you down a path, a different road.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah.
It'd be as simple as turning left or turning right. That can like change absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea because it never plays out.
Yeah.
Both ways.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly. So you don't really know. But here we are. We're taking three. Welcome to the podcast. If you're here, if you're a regular visitor and you hang out with us a lot, thank you for being here. And if you're new, thanks for joining us today. It's my lovely husband, Greg, who I've had the honor
said audacity.
I've had the honor to do more of my life with than without. And 25 years gives you a lot of places you could visit about how we got here. So I have to say, it's really awkward having you sit on my right side. I know you did that on purpose because the last two podcasts we recorded, I was on you're on my left, mm-hmm. and it feels so wrong for you to be on this side.
Want to switch?
No, it's fine. It just, it's good. It's good for me. It just was like, I don't know if I, you know what? I think it's because.
You can switch.
You know what I think it is though? I think part of it is typically, like when we drive here in the UK, it always feels wrong that you're always my right. But we spend many hours in cars and mostly right. in where you're on my left.
Right.
And so I'm used to just like gazing over here.
Gazing.
And gazing to you over here and having you on this side.
Looking longingly.
And now you're on this side. And I'm just like, okay, what's it like to have you on this side? It just feels new. It's good though. This is a new podcast. Take three.
Take three?
Take three.
Better?
Okay, so yeah, this is better. I don't know why. It just feels so awkward. Having you on my other side. Huh? And I can see your ocean blue better on this side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anywho, coffee. We've had
tea.
Tea. Yeah, I'm a tea girl. You're a coffee boy. Mm-hmm. And that's the way we roll. And we don't really mix because I only love the smell of coffee. I don't love the taste or the feeling of coffee. Well, mostly caffeine.
I knew somebody that would brew a pot every morning and dump it out because they grew up like with the smell of coffee. Like yeah. their parent would make coffee in the morning and that's how they woke up.
Yeah.
So they don't even set an alarm. They just set an alarm on the thing and they brew an entire pot and then dump it out.
Well, I feel like I kind of just did that. Not by making a cup of coffee because you always do it every morning. And it's a certain smell. Like there's a, my parents had like, I want to say it was like Taboo or it's a Canadian coffee. It came in those big tins.
Folgers?
Oh, maybe it was Folgers.
Is it like a green tin?
Yeah, with yeah. The lid? Like the, it's like a Tupperware lid on the
top.
Yeah.
It's a Folgers.
So recently when we were in, I don't know where, somewhere in the UK, we went to this little shop and all those local artisans had made these different types of essential oils or candles and things like that. We found this candle that smells like black coffee. Hmm. And I was like, it took me right back to being a kid. Like mostly Saturday mornings, I think that's when we could hang around a little more and just take that smell. And it just took me back to being a kid and Saturday mornings and eating Cheerios and my dad just perking coffee and you know, I don't know. Just there's something about smells and sensations to take you back places. Mm-hmm. And that I don't know if I'll ever perk my own coffee just to smell it in the morning, but I would definitely continue with the candles because it's like, oh, it's honestly the best smell. Mm. I love it. Yeah. Anyways.
Saturday mornings. I mean, it was cartoons like Bugs Bunny mostly.
Yeah.
And Cinnamon Toast. That was like the,
oh man,
that was the way.
Cinnamon toast with the butter, brown sugar, mm-hmm. and cinnamon.
My dad in his robe, sitting in his chair, drinking coffee and laughing at Bugs Bunny. That was
wow.
That was the thing. Memory.
We definitely did do our cartoon episodes. I was actually thinking, well, talking to the kids of the day about watching cartoons because we're in a area right now where they have like TV. We don't typically watch TV. Mm-hmm. And on came like, it was Saturday morning of the day and Allie turned on. She's like, oh my gosh, look at all these cartoons. And I was like, yeah, I grew up on Saturday morning cartoons where you just went from 5, 7, and 3. I don't actually remember which one, but those are the three
channels.
The channels, yeah. 5, 7, and 3 in the channels. And just like, you know, click, 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 click to each channel and just finding that like your cartoon hour. And then I was like, but when Dad and I first got married, we moved to Austria. And we lived in this small little like apartment-ish, but had nothing in it but a hot plate. There was no microwave. We actually had to go buy ourselves a microwave. And the cheapest microwave was like vibrant purple. And so we hauled it up on our Vespa up to the top of this hill and had our microwave dinners and watched our cartoons on Saturday mornings. It was that and it was the music channel and
MTV.
Yeah.
In German.
German. But all the songs, obviously, were English because it was English artists. Mm-hmm. And so we learned so much Christina Aguilera in that time. And
1999.
Yeah. She was hitting it. And that was like remembering back to that. It was just like, man, you had to sit through all of the commercials that were in German. and just like taking it all in. And it's just the slow mornings because you couldn't make it fast, or you couldn't be like trying to fast forward past these commercials that no one wants to listen to just to get to the show. And it's just like watching the TV here the day, I was like, oh man, I'm brought way back to being a kid. Mm-hmm. And what it was like to like have, you can't make things happen faster. You just like, now you just,
we were bored as kids a lot.
Yeah.
Like waiting for the bus to show up to take you to school. You didn't, you didn't have a phone. You didn't have anything to distract you. You're just like there.
Yeah.
Like staring at your shoes.
Yeah.
Counting rocks. Right? Like that's kind of all you did.
Yeah.
And you're just standing there by yourself waiting. Hopefully you're in an area where there's like a couple people that you could like talk to, but often you're just standing there.
Yeah. I went to a Christian school, so I was the only one. There was like 12 kids on the bus.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so there, I was the only one in my stop. And if it was snowing and the bus got hung up somewhere, it's like, you didn't know.
No.
You just hung out waiting for it. Now it's like, everything's changed so much and we can make it easier on ourselves. But yeah, we've lived a lot. I feel like when we've talked about sitting here and what this could look like, there's so many different moments mm-hmm. that we could pull from. I mean, kids change your lives like dramatically. Marriage obviously changes your whole world. And then there's all like the little things that don't in at the time you don't see them as big, huge moments. I remember hearing someone once say it's like the biggest moments in your life is when you buy a house, have a new job, or get married. I'm sure there was kids in there somewhere too, but they didn't equate for all the little moments in between that are like, you can't see them coming.
Okay. Married once.
Yeah.
Check.
Yeah.
Buy a house like 12 times.
I think it was like 16 actually.
So.
So
I can see where that came from. If I'm like, yeah. You go to the 40s or the 50s and it's like, the moment you've earned enough to like qualify to get your own home and do the thing. And yeah I get it. Cause most people got their home, lived in it for their entire life.
Yeah.
And they go out feet first. Like,
yeah.
But.
And they get their job and they're in it forever.
But we flipped houses.
Yeah.
Just to try to earn extra income. And it was house after house after house. You said every 7 months.
On average, because I think it was, we were talking about it and it was, and that in between the year we got married, 1999, and 2007, which is when we had Kelea, we had moved. I think we said, I mean, was it 12 times or something? I can't remember what we had said. Anyways, yeah, so many moving and so much, not just moving, but absolute renovation jobs, like scrubbing, you know, all of the stipple off of the ceilings and scraping walls and pulling up lino. It wasn't just like easy flips. Let's throw some paint on the walls. Like, no, this will need a full reno. And we could do it with two toddlers. Yes.
And we did.
And I think the moving part of our life, those just get blurred. Like there wasn't any massive moment where you're just like, well, that really changed everything. You know, they're all kind of a blur into one because there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. When you're moving that many times in a year, yeah, they just become one big, just becomes a whole big blurred version, like season. You're like, we moved a lot.
And then like a 10-year stint in one place.
Yeah.
Which is one of my least favorite homes. I know. At the beginning.
Yeah.
Because I had to leave Calgary and go to Airdrie.
I know. Well, because we had left the house of our dreams.
Wants to go to Airdrie.
So we'd flipped and flipped and flipped houses until we found a house that we like fell in love with. It was in an older area. It had a beautiful backyard. It had like a huge deck and a hot tub, which like, I mean, at the time, again, I'm 27. To think like 27, we moved that many times. We were having our third baby. We were buying this giant house.
Four level split.
Three living rooms. Like, it was a total dream.
Remember the laundry room? It was
It was like
huge.
A giant bedroom size.
Yeah, it was huge. It's amazing.
And then a boot room. And it just like, it was a dream.
The tiered backyard with the fire pit and trampoline and shed.
Mature trees. Like, it was all done. We didn't have to, we did do renovations there, but we didn't have to do anything like immediate if we didn't want to. And it was just such a nice place. We're like, I want to die here. Like, take me out when I'm dead. Like, I'm going to live here forever. People would come to our house and be like, this is the best house. It had such a good feeling in the house. The plan, you could have so many people in the house and not know it because of all the levels. Like at the time we were pastoring, we were like, this will be a great place to house all these kids because we can have all these, like, we would do these cereal nights. We'd have like 20 different types of cereal and as many different types of milk that we could at the time. And then we would set up different games in different rooms. And so they would all connect, right? Mm-hmm. And we would have like 100 kids in the house, and you hardly knew it because of how it was laid out. And then came the time where we're like, dang, we can't keep the lights on. And they're like, I think we're going to need to pull shoot and do it fast. And it was at the time when the market had just crashed.
Yeah.
So we weren't like, we knew if we sold at that time, we were going to lose money. And it sucked because it was the only house that we lost money. I think all the money we had gained from all of our other moves, we lost in that house. And it was like devastating, but what was more devastating was to have no lights on in the house with three kids.
Right.
Because we couldn't afford it. It was just the mortgage was just taking everything we had. So we move to what we thought was like the armpit of Alberta. At the time, it had nothing. It had no Walmart. It was like so far out there. If you needed anything, you had to go to the city. Move to this foreclosure house.
Mm-hmm.
It hadn't been lived in for like over a year, I think, or something. The grass was as dead as it could possibly be. And
it's concrete.
Yeah.
We had to water it for days.
Well, we had to get it aerated.
Yeah.
So many times. Just it finally, I feel like.
For 2 years.
Yeah, it just started to revive. But the house was like very much a bare bones.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was not much character to it. We'd come from a house with so much character. Mm-hmm. It was just bare bones. And then we started to do work in the house and make it our own. I feel like we were always doing renovations there. Like we had floods in the kitchen and things like that. So we had some water leaks and stuff. So until it became like our home, it felt like much of our time in Sagewood.
Yeah, but it wasn't the house.
It wasn't the house.
No.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. It was the
house. It was where we were.
Yeah.
But it had nothing to do with the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the thing that held us.
Yeah.
And we became the home.
Yeah.
We became mm-hmm. what home was. Like that's where we really, well, back in the one before the, in the dream home, we sort of started to find each other. And then by the time we got there, it was like, became more and more of a pattern and a habit to be with each other.
Yeah.
And not be so busy, not be so distracted doing good things that we actually found some great things
mm-hmm.
in us. And that just got better and better and better.
Yeah.
So house has good memories, but all the memories are with us.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we actually became a family.
Yeah.
When we bought a table.
Yeah, because that house didn't have
a big island. The big island we would eat at.
Yeah.
But not a table. And then when we got a table.
Yeah.
Moved our living room out. We had no living room. Yeah.
Well, we had it upstairs.
A bonus room. But
yeah. And then we eventually, we bought this. I remember that it was a big deal because we had a living room on the main floor. And then we're like, let's buy a table. And we went and found this table that was built from like old, was it sailboats or?
Fishing boats from Indonesia.
From Indonesia.
Yeah. You know, all the colorful boats. Yeah.
That's why
the table was like all these different planks.
Right.
Yeah.
And that became like, I feel like that was the first time that our house felt like a home.
Mm-hmm.
When we like started to meet around the table and we started cooking together. Up until that time, we had found each other for sure in our first like in the house prior, but it was still a lot of busyness that didn't allow us to gather on a table and enjoy a meal together mm-hmm. on a regular basis. That was still very a treat, you know, mm-hmm. when we actually had a meal together or on a table. And then all of a sudden we made these big decisions and we got our table and that changed, like it changed the feel, it changed the rhythm of our house. I think.
Yeah, it interrupted. Well, the space became something different.
Yeah.
And so it's funny, like what becomes the heart of every house you're in, mm-hmm. the spot where like everyone just sort of seems to end up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that the table became that, that living room was not where everybody ended up. Everybody ended up in the bonus room mostly. Yeah. But then when we were there, we had a record player up there, but we didn't have like, I mean, in the kitchen area, the dining room area, but we didn't have a television. We didn't have any of those things down there. Mm-hmm. It was just like the table. And then that became the hub.
Yeah.
Everybody's sitting there, they're coloring or drawing or writing, or mm-hmm. it becomes the spot where people just gathered.
Yeah.
And that brought a closeness. Mm-hmm. So it's our lifestyle did. Mm-hmm. It allowed for it. We'd done the changes with like what we were doing, what we prioritized.
Yeah.
We shifted, but then the table allowed that to happen a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Because like sometimes, you've heard me say it before, sometimes a space informs a life, but a life also informs a space. Mm-hmm. And so it's this like symbiotic relationship between us and the place we're in.
Yeah.
And some places allow for things easier than others.
Yeah.
And so I think we just found the right rhythm there. It's just like, oh, for this time with our family, this is the right setup.
Yeah.
Having a table where there should be a living room, like a giant ass table.
Yeah. Huge. We could seat like 12 people.
Yeah. And did.
Yeah.
And that became the spot. Like people would come over more frequently.
Yeah.
Like friends, not just like
people. Our whole main floor.
Yeah.
Was a kitchen and dining room.
Yeah.
Just so you can have a reference of what we're talking about. The entire main floor. And we didn't, I mean, it wasn't a giant house, but when it felt like, like the whole space when you walked in was just like dining room, kitchen. Mm-hmm. And that's all we had on that floor.
Yeah.
And it did allow people to come over. And that's when people did come. We didn't go to the living room. We would sit around the table for hours and hours and hours and talk. And we always say like this, our table is open to anybody. Mm-hmm. And it became a place where so many different kinds of conversations would unfold and go until the wee hours of the morning, and tears and laughter and games where people were like uptight, you know, all those. It was just like, it's one of the things, the pieces we still have in our lives, even though we don't sit at it frequently or ever.
No, we do not.
But it's something that we've got still, and it's like,
it's one of the things that the kids will fight over when the time comes. I want a handful of things. Mm-hmm. They're like, I want that.
Yeah, want the table.
I want good things.
Yeah,
that just a few.
Mm-hmm. But that hold that. Yeah.
So but then it all changed.
Yeah, it did. The house became a home because we had a really good connection between us and the kids. Mm-hmm. Things shifted. And for a long time, it was a lot of baton passing, but it all of a sudden became this really safe, safe place. And it wasn't like revolving doors or people were just coming and going. It felt like it was the most content, I can say for myself, that I ever felt in our space. I just felt like everything had its place. And it just felt good. But I think that's because of knowing that we felt good. Mm-hmm. And I had come through like a mental breakdown, and there was all these things we had weeded through, and we'd continue to find each other. And I remember you doing these experiences in our house where it was like church in our house with the kids. It was a way to connect with the kids because we were in
it was art therapy.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
It was. And there was these beautiful things that made it, I just brought the connection deeper than we'd ever experienced, I think. And talking about things.
It gave you something to gather around.
Yeah.
It gave us something like intentional. To gather around as a family and take time every week to do this art craft experience that would allow people to express what they're feeling, what they're thinking. Sometimes it was about things you need to let go of. Mm-hmm. And then you have a physical representation of writing that out and then dropping that into this bucket tied to a rock, and you like see it sink to the bottom, and you actually let go of things or the gratitude tree, or, and then the kids started doing their own.
Yeah.
Right. Like pick a stuffed animal.
That was so cute.
And then like dress it up or something like that. Like
it was pick a stuffed animal that best resembles you. So yeah. Ellie brought all her stuffed animals downstairs to the table.
There was a few.
There was a lot. And she's like, pick one that best represents you. And then on a little card, write the things that are unique about you.
Right. Yes.
And then your stuffed animal will hold the card. And it was just like, write all the things that are unique about you. And it was really cool seeing it from her perspective, four-year-old Ellie at the time. Just like what was like, what she found intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was creating spaces for the kids to really express themselves and for us to express ourselves, which created this other kind of depth and connection that made our home feel like a home. But really what was happening is we were becoming very much a home with each other.
Right.
Yeah. And then a song played.
Yes. So with my new line of work, just to catch everyone up, working with a group of friends and doctors down in Central Valley, California. And the idea was to move down there, but that requires a visa process. So we went to the border, tried getting across. They're like, no, you don't qualify for this type of visa. Try this one, tried that one. It didn't work. And it got down to like looking for this one specific type of visa that we applied for, which is a bit like winning the lottery.
Yeah.
Didn't expect it to happen. We were probably in the best space we'd been in, as a family.
Yeah.
Together, you and me, good flow.
Mm-hmm.
And then we win the lottery.
Literally
get the visa.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we go down there and find a house.
So back it up a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think what's really interesting is we all knew this isn't a quick process. This whole process was about 2 years from the beginning when we first went to the border.
Yes.
That whole process was like 2 years. So there's a real, like, I think in me, there was like a settling and being like, it's not going to happen. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And then because at first it was like, I want to go. Like, I'm so excited to go, you know, I just, you know, and then it just was like, okay, that's a really lofty dream. It's probably not going to happen. And that's okay. And so I think part of me became really settled with where we were and content. We were getting, we were really at a really good, healthy space for us and the kids. And there was lots of growth within us. And then what we said, you're like, if I ever get the visa, I will play this specific song.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was like, far off.
Song titles, California.
Yeah. Song titles, California.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but it's a very specific song.
Yeah.
Beginning and everything. And so the song starts playing and
so I had the Sonos. So I had the whole house wired together. So like, I just started playing it.
And we're all like, I remember being in my bedroom and looking across the hall at the kids and I was like, and we've just all dashed downstairs and you're sitting there at the kitchen table and you're just like, your face is just like all like beaming, you've got your smile and you're just like, the song's playing and we all come down and we're dancing in the kitchen to the song. We're like, what? Is this real? Because you had just got an email saying we've been accepted.
So anticlimactic. It's just like, open this email attachment and you get it. Like,
yeah.
No fanfare, no nothing.
There's no trumpets. Just,
there you go.
Yeah. So we're dancing around the kitchen and we're like, what does this mean now? Like, Part of me was so excited, but there was another part of me that was equally as sad because it felt like we finally had worked through so much stuff and it felt like I finally had the capacity to like want to do life, you know, it come through such a dark season and we had gone through so much stuff that it was like, finally we were happy, like not happy, but we were content and we were it was really good. And I was working, I'd gone become an Ayurvedic massage therapist. And so I had a spa room in our house and I had a ton of clients, but it was like not too much, not too little. It was just like, we had found this really beautiful flow of life that wasn't a go, 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 but it was a cadence that felt good. And so when we get this we get this the song playing in the house. I'm just like, what? And the kids are screaming and excited. And they're like, now what? Now what's the next process? Which can take us to where you were. You're like, so we go down to California.
Yeah. Yeah, I skipped ahead there a little bit. There's so much you have to do to make it all work.
Yeah.
And so then begins the process. It's like, okay, we got to find a place.
Yeah.
We got to sell our place.
Yeah.
Or rent it out. But like, how do we make it all work? Like, how do you?
Because there was a 3-year visa, right?
3-year visa.
Yeah.
But that can be extended, and then you can get residency and stuff like that. And we weren't sure exactly what the plans were, but that was sort of the way it was heading.
Yeah.
And so go down there and look at all these rental properties and
looked at buying one.
Yeah. And tried to figure out how to do that, but it's hard to buy property there if you're not Canadian. Like, if you are Canadian, there's like all these other things you have to do. It's not that big a deal, but it's like,
yeah,
it's uncertain. Anyways, we find this house on an almond
orchard.
Oh. Yeah. And it's like up on the hill overlooking this valley of all these almond trees.
So beautiful.
Which would have been super dusty, but
yeah,
had this huge garage. I'm like, oh, I can build stuff in there. And it's like a little bit removed from the town, so we're going to live out on a farm.
Like, across the street was horses. The girls love horses.
This could be it.
Pool. We're just like, is this what?
Yeah.
So we apply.
Put down our deposit.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, you can move in at this time. So put down big deposit on this property and then go back and sell ours.
Which happened so fast.
Yeah. Got everything ready, sold it. And then started to pack everything into boxes.
And this was packing like we had moved so many times, like we mentioned. But this was packing like we'd never experienced. Every single box had to be itemized with a number that had to correlate with a spreadsheet that had the items on that and the box titled. It took hours, hours upon hours upon hours to just do like the kitchen cupboards. And everything. If you want to find something, you're like, look on the spreadsheet. That's in box 46. I think we had 198 boxes.
No, we had 128 boxes.
28 boxes. Okay.
That's a lot of shit.
That's a lot of stuff. A lot. And that didn't count for the furniture.
No.
Because we had kind of pared down a bit,
mm-hmm.
but there were still a lot of things that were like, we wanted to like, we knew the house, we knew the floor plan, but we hadn't actually gone in it because we couldn't get in
when we were there.
No, but we saw like we could see all the bedrooms and the layout. We're like, okay, this stuff will be great here. We wanted to have that home feeling and bring a lot of our things. And that was probably more me than you, but I really wanted to have the stuffies, you know.
Yeah, but I also wanted my tools in the garage.
Yeah, that's true.
It was just like they had a whole bunch of wine barrels on the property that I was going to turn into like rocking chairs or something. It was like had these lofty ideals of like, oh, I'm going to do this thing on the site. Ridiculous.
Yeah, but. I mean, we were creative people. We love to be creative.
Yeah,
so
but
we kept our hot glue guns and saws. Let's be real. And then we had to get a moving company because that's how it works. You have to have a company, a registered company who can go across the border with all of your things. And that they came and that.
They picked up everything and took it to Vancouver.
Yeah. And waited for us.
And then we went.
We packed 5 days of clothing because we're like, we'll make it kind of a trip. And we just actually think it was more like 3 days of clothing because we just needed enough to kind of make it a bit of an experience and stop at a few places along the way.
We stopped in Seattle on the way, see a friend.
Yeah, we had snacks. Our family had sent us a bunch of like letters that we could open when we got there. And Lisa Wood like packed all our friend of ours. She packed all these like snacks and like little treasures for the kids to open along the way. So it's like partly, it was like something to do over the 36 hours of travel, something to look forward to. And it was May 1st, 2018.
Yep.
My dad's birthday.
And it was super early in the morning. It was like 4, 5, something like that.
Yeah.
Still dark out. So it must have been like 5.
Mm-hmm.
We roll up to the border.
We have our dog. Who we're most concerned about.
Yeah.
Like, the dog?
So we have paperwork for the car. We have paperwork for the moving company, and it's
we've
all
already
following
been pre-approved.
Behind us. Yeah, we're already stamped.
We're good to go.
Our visas are in place.
Yeah,
we've gone across. Everything's ready to go.
Just the kids.
It's gonna take 2 days driving down because that's when we get our property down there.
Yeah,
and then so the 2 days later, the truck was going to come.
Yeah,
and meet us down there, and so the kids had to get their stamp, which is like $15.
Yeah,
per kid. Because the visa is under my
name.
So you couldn't work down there or anything like that. It was all under me. And roll up. And this guy's like, where are you going? Border agent. Mm-hmm. Agent Owens.
I remember that feeling of pulling up to it and being like kind of butt clenching, being like, okay, everything should be fine, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like we're bringing all our stuff. But like you said, the dog was the thing we were most concerned about because you had to have different paperwork. And anyways. And he's like, what are you doing here? I'm like, or where are you going? Like, we're heading down to California. I got a visa down there going to work for the next couple of years. This is paperwork. I give him the paperwork and the visa. And he's like, what's this? I'm like, it's my visa. It's an H-1B visa. He's like, were you some sort of movie star or something? No, not really, but... It's like, well, how'd you get this visa? I'm like, I applied for it and your country gave it to me. He says, you're going to have to prove to me you deserve this.
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, inside.
Park your car.
It's like, what? But we're approved. Everything is in place. He's like, inside. So I go and park the car over in the little holding area.
Mm-hmm.
Go inside. He's like, everybody inside.
Yeah.
So we all go inside and sit on the bench.
And our dog, who has mass anxiety because he's a rescue, is losing his mind because he hates
sitting
cars
in the car.
Begin it.
Yeah.
And we sat in the front there and just like watched them communicate with you and all just like sitting on pins and needles. And then eventually you're being passed back and forth from room to room.
Mm-hmm. You're sitting on a bench. Like a bench for hours.
Like 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Like
going through
hours.
Paperwork.
Kids haven't eaten anything, so we're just sitting there. We can't go anywhere. We have to ask to use the bathroom.
So we're going, what's this company you're going to? Oh, it's a company down in Central Valley. We looked it up. There's no website. I'm like, yeah, there is. Turns out the website went down that night. So I'm calling the guys. I'm like, hey, the website's down. They're trying to find something. I'm like, can you just talk to the people there? He's like, I'm not interested in talking to anybody else but you. It's like, okay. And so he's going through all the paperwork, asking me all sorts of questions. What's this? What's this? What's this? And then like you said, move from room to room.
Pass from person to person.
They're in there. They're asking about my history. How I met the people down in California, how if I was doing this as work, how would I qualify for this? Accuse me of all sorts of stuff, of buying my bachelor's degree.
Right.
When it was just like, how much do you pay for this bachelor's degree? I'm like, well, I paid 23 years of work.
Yeah.
Like it's an equivalency. That's what.
Yeah.
Your other parts or your country seem to validate that and let it happen. So
yeah,
you're contradicting that, the whole thing back and forth. We're in the office and different people are coming in and he's explaining to them what's going on and they're laughing about it. They're making fun of me. Like, oh, there's a big pastor guy in here doing this thing. They're mocking me. It was so confusing, you know, like, as to like how is this happening? Like how is this allowed? It was 2018, so hey buddy.
Thanks.
Hey Riggers. It's 2018, so it was like 1 year into the Trump presidency and all the border stuff had shifted.
Right.
The balance of power. I remember sitting in that office and seeing that Trump picture on the wall. Just this cat-like grin on this face just hanging there and like whatever anybody thinks of that, it's just like all the rules had shifted and changed. And it became apparent that it's like, this is not happening. Not only is this not happening, I have to figure out a way to get out of this without going to jail.
Yeah, and it's so crazy because you hadn't done anything wrong. We did everything through an American lawyer, immigration lawyer. But there was so much tension around, like, do you remember there was, I remember when we, the kids and I left, you could see us through the window and you weren't sure where they were taking us.
Yeah.
And because there was so much other stuff going on with other borders and things happening with children, you know, being taken away and things like that.
Yeah.
And so it, there's a lot of
the southern border with families being separated and removed.
That's right.
And
yeah.
So there's all the stuff that's going on.
So we were there, I think at hour six, they let us go outside to get the kids something to eat. Cause by this time it was five. We're now nearing noon and the kids haven't had anything to eat since we got there. And at the time Ellie was eight. So we have some little people still.
Yeah.
And we go to get some food and you saw us out the window. And I remember afterwards, you're like, I didn't know where they were taking you. Like, you don't know what this could look like.
Yeah.
Cause feels like you are a criminal and you don't have any,
you are.
Yeah. Like you have no rights, you know,
like you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. But in those scenarios, last line of defense, some of them think they are.
Yeah.
And so I remember listening to all the conversations out in the hallway of other people
that
were coming through and being detained and having to explain why they brought rice in their camper,
that.
This old couple, and then they got like turned away because they were carrying rice.
Yeah.
And it's like whatever certain motives were behind each agent's prejudice and bias, they could find reason to do whatever they want.
Yeah,
is what it felt like. And it was for the first time in my life, I felt what it's like to be powerless, to be on the underside of power.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's people that live through that every single day.
Yeah.
There's people that want, like, drive to work hoping not to be pulled over.
Yeah.
Because they could be shot just because of somebody's prejudice, just because of somebody's opinion of their skin color or their religion or their race.
Yeah.
And I'd never experienced that or felt that, to be powerless.
Yeah.
And to have someone hold your future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do whatever they want with it.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I can't imagine what it's like for some people to have to deal with that every day.
Yeah.
It's a horrible feeling. But I only had to experience it for 8-10 hours.
Yeah.
But then the time came, and they're like, we're deporting you. And it's like, okay, like back to Canada. Like, yeah, you're going back. I'm like, can I have my visa? And he's like, no, that's mine. It's like, oh, this is a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I still have the writing in my passport. Marks it all up with red ink. And it's like right over top my visa stamp and everything. He's like,
denied
or removed.
Yeah, removed.
I think is what it says. And it's just a complete asshole about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which.
Wasn't it he, the same guy who said, I've been here for a year and I've what was his?
No. He had only been there for a year and a half.
Right.
When you're sitting around, you get to hear some things.
Yeah.
And he had removed more people than anybody else in the branch, else in that branch. Location.
Yeah.
And so it was notches on the belt for this dude.
Yeah.
He's just like, got another one.
Yeah.
Got another one.
Yeah.
And he was the last line of defense for this nation.
Yeah.
So, or at least viewed himself that way. And do the paperwork, sign the thing, get my paperwork back, sign another thing. But he says, like, so this is your ban and this is your removal. I'm like, my ban? He's like, yeah, you're being removed. We're going to take your visa and you're being banned from the United States. And I'm just like, wait, what? Like, this was not anything anybody had mentioned.
Yeah.
It was brand new. And I'm like, okay, like, how long does this ban in effect? And then that's when Owens was back over his shoulder. He's like, lifetime. You're never coming back here. And say, like,
whoa.
What?
Yeah.
Like, how? And they had the unilateral power.
Yeah.
Just to do that. Mm-hmm. And now it's on me to fight that.
Yeah.
To prove that I wasn't lying on a resume.
Yeah.
Because that's what it came down to. They said I was lying on my documentation, specifically my resume, about a job title.
Right.
And that was it.
Didn't need anything more.
Needed nothing else. And so now it's up to me to do all the paperwork and the appeals and all these things in order to just correct somebody else's lie.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like their own rules, their own understanding that they took for themselves.
Yeah.
Didn't have to have anything to back it up, but just was like, no. And I remember that one guy talking to us. It was actually his superior, his supervisor, who said,
great shirt.
He
rolled it on a motorbike with that great shirt on.
I remember that. That's one thing I remembered him. He had the nicest, cool, kindest demeanor. Yeah. And he's like, I'm so sorry. He says, there's nothing I can do. Once one of our agents decides something, we have to all confirm and back that up. And he's like, I'm really sorry this has happened to you. But he escorted us out.
He was fantastic.
Fantastic. I think if we would have been there like an hour later, our future would have looked so different, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember driving away from the border and all of us are just like shock and absolute shock. And poor you had been through 8 hours of interrogation. I didn't know what.
So you just need food.
Yeah.
We need like just numb, absolutely numb. Yeah. Because it's just like the rug just gets pulled out from underneath you. You're falling. You're like, falling into what? Like, you don't even know. It's like down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Where you go. And so it's just like next door to your business, find somewhere to eat.
Yeah.
It's just like, what it was, Jamba Juice.
Yeah, I was just going to say Booster Juice, but yeah, it was Jamba Juice.
Yeah. Okay. There's something. Yeah. And you like pull off on the side of the road. It's like maybe 2 miles away from the border.
Yeah.
And you just pull in and it's just, I don't remember. If you ordered or I ordered, I have no idea. It was just a blur.
I don't think the kids might have ordered.
It's just go in and get a whole bunch of juices.
Yeah.
And then we drove to, we had nowhere to go.
No, we had nowhere. And our stuff was in limbo. They were waiting for us to cross the border to give them the, okay, we've crossed the border. Now we can come with your things.
Yeah.
So they're waiting for us. And you go to a park. You're like, where should we go? And you found this park, and I remember sitting at this picnic table, at this point I don't think you even really had communicated anything to any of us, because you're in complete shock and like, yeah, what just happened? And then it's like, okay, what happened? Because we were just sitting outside, waiting and waiting and waiting, never assuming that we would be going back.
Yeah.
And so at the picnic table, and you told us, you're like, what had happened? And then you had to make the calls to the guys.
I had to break down first.
Yeah.
And like, it was really weird because it was very numb.
Yeah.
And shock and disbelief. And then you're like racing ahead days and weeks and years. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, okay, everything that you had considered is now removed. It's like, it's just gone.
Yeah.
but not because you're like, I can appeal, we can make something happen. So you've got all of these conflicting things, and it's just like, okay, it's just so much emotion. Mm-hmm. That you just, so I had a little breakdown.
Yeah.
And then had to call the guys and be like, hey, like, this is what's going on. This is what's happening. And then it's like, we got to find somewhere to go. Mm-hmm. Like, where do we go? It was already late in the day.
Well, because a lawyer had said, like, you called
stay
him. Stay close. Like, we're going to work this out. This is just abuse of power.
Yeah.
Let me work on this. And then you had to go spend, well, first of all, we're like, where are we going to go? We have our dog.
Yeah.
You know, it's summer in BC, or I guess May in BC. And we're like, and the hotel wouldn't allow our dog to come.
So we had to find a kennel.
For our dog, who has mass anxiety. And he goes to this kennel for the night.
We go to a hotel for the night, and I'm like talking to lawyers and taking pictures of all my paperwork because I couldn't find a fax machine or anything. Is it like faxing? I was a thing, and like started sending off all the paperwork to them. They're like, we're going to look into this. We're going to figure it out. You got to stay close, blah, blah, blah. And just like, well, there's a pool here. Let's just send the kids to the pool.
I remember taking the kids to the pool and you sitting up at the desk.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to, the lawyer wanted you to rewrite everything that happened. As many details as you could remember and recall from that time. So you were in that room for like hours.
Typing
and reliving all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids, and I remember being in the hot tub and just like staring.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. Staring into the distance being like, what just happened? And what, as parents, are supposed to know the next thing. And we didn't know. Not only did we not know the next thing, we had no idea what was going on with our future. We just like sold everything, like our home and the things that felt like we had, you know, things that were ours. And we had our car, and we had probably 3/4 of the things that we had originally owned in this van, this moving truck.
Do you remember? We're at the hotel, and in walks some family. Some like relatives of relatives.
Oh, yeah.
So like,
I forgot about this.
Yeah. In walks a couple people that are,
I don't even know.
Gossipy.
Okay. I don't even remember who they are.
At best, like it was a little gossipy. Yeah. Like there's a lot of tension with that side of the family's family.
Okay.
Like, so anyways, and like in they walk, they're like, oh, what are you guys doing here? And it's just like, I can't tell you anything. Nobody knows what's going on.
No.
We haven't really talked to anyone outside of guys in California and lawyers. Like, they hadn't had time. And it's just like, oh, we're just taking a day.
And we're like,
in another province.
Crying our eyes out for hours.
It's just like, oh, my God.
I forgot about that.
And so then, we send off all the stuff. Got up the next morning, went and picked up Mumford.
Who had literally had lost his mind.
He had no voice.
No, he didn't.
From barking all night. He was so traumatized. This little...
Cool, he had spent 8 hours in the car. He could see us from the window, mm-hmm. but we couldn't go out. And they wouldn't
let
us...
Then he's absorbing everyone's stress and confusion. And And then he's on his own.
And he's on his own and in a kennel.
And he doesn't do good in those situations.
No. So he is like, trying to bark. He's just so traumatized. And the lawyer again is like, just stay close. So we're like, where do we go? Like, what do we do? So we have a friend who we've known for a long time, and they had a small cabin that wasn't too far from where. Like
500-600 square feet, something like that.
Yeah, it's like tiny two bedroom, cabin. One bathroom.
Really pretty.
Yeah. And they're like, we message them and they're like, oh my gosh, like, we're not going to be up to there till the summer sometime. So go ahead. Like, it's empty. And this is like, you know, whatever, May 3rd or something at this point. So we head over there. And I feel like all of us at that point just started to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Just the reality of like everything we had let go of for this beautiful idea and dream. Mm-hmm. That had been sitting there for 2 years And I remember feeling, and I've told you this before, but I told it to you way later. I remember feeling when we were packing the boxes, this isn't actually happening. Like something in me was like, this isn't happening.
Right.
And I was like, but it's happening. Like your head's just getting in the way. Of course it's happening. You have the visas, you've gone to your house, like everything's lined up. But something in me just was like, this feels like it's not happening,
right.
You know? And then when that happened, I was like, oh my gosh, like somewhere in my nowhere, I knew that this wasn't happening. And but now what? The lawyer feels, it feels very promising. You know, your conversations with the lawyer felt very promising. Like, yeah, this is all going to get worked out. You just need a bit of time. I need this information. I need this information. And I think after a week, you know, it's like, you're thinking, okay, any time.
Turn into 2 weeks. Turn into a month.
Yeah.
Turn into 2 months.
Yeah. Turn into 15 weeks.
In a tiny little cabin.
Yeah. We had 5 days of clothing. Well, 3 days of clothing. Because we're like, we're traveling light because everything's in the van.
Meanwhile, my stuff is all in all our stuff, yeah, that we had in the moving company. Yeah. It's in Vancouver. They're like, we got to offload it. We need to use our trucks.
Yeah.
So they have to offload it into shipping containers.
Yeah.
And store it. So now I'm
paying
for a vacation for all my stuff.
Yeah. To have to hang out in Vancouver.
To do its thing while we sit and wait.
Yeah.
And I think there was just a point where we're like,
we're going crazy.
We have to leave here.
Yeah.
We can't exist here anymore.
Yeah.
Like resort life is fun for a couple weeks, but then it's just like, no,
it's fun if you kind of know what you're doing. It's an entirely different world when you are sitting in complete limbo. Like I remember us sitting at, it was like, I think it was week 6 or something at the cabin. And we're like, maybe we should read the letters our family sent us to open when we were supposed to be arriving in California. And we sat there and we just like cried at like the fact that this dream wasn't happening. And then I remember reading one letter from Kendra and she was like, I can't believe they let you in. I can't believe they let you into the country. And just joking, you know, smiling face. And I'm like, they didn't though, you know? And just, yeah, feeling that deep sense of loss,
mm-hmm,
and lost. Like up until this point, we'd worked so hard and we had come so far to feel like we were going in the right direction and we had finally connected to be like, I am literally tumbling and I don't even know how to create a safe feeling for the kids because we don't know what's next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then enough was enough.
Yeah.
So then, remember we had to decide, like, we can't sit here.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? Do we go back?
Yeah.
Do we just go start our life again and pick up where we left off? Do we keep waiting?
Yeah.
Do we keep appealing? Do we move somewhere else?
Yeah.
So it's like, well, if we did move somewhere else, where would we move? Because we didn't really want to go back.
No.
Felt wrong to go back.
Yeah.
At least to me. It felt like, no, that's not right. I'm not supposed to go back. I don't think we should go back.
Yeah.
So where do we go?
Yeah.
It's like, well, working remotely, so we can kind of go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So then we got these, I was like, let's figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time to like move beyond this and dream a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if something does come through, then we can always pivot, but we have to not sit in limbo. We can't sit in nothingness.
No.
We have to have a direction.
And we kept ourselves busy enough, mm-hmm, as we could. Like, I remember us getting these cookbooks. Do you remember? We found these cookbooks.
Oh, yeah.
So, like,
I remember.
Make your own cheese. And, like, we were just, like, keeping, uh-huh, ourselves busy. We renovated the whole cabin for our friends. So we're, mm-hmm, like, we can do some stuff. We've done a lot of renovating. And they're like, great. So like you did a beautiful like shiplock wall for them, or
it was a thank you for letting us stay there. It was
stay
busy.
Great for us to stay busy.
Yeah.
And we had kind of, I feel like we came to the end of that. We're like,
yeah,
I don't know what else we can do.
So I got these giant post-it notes, like big
life size
sticky sheets for like poster board and put them all over the windows. The one wall had, I think, like 8 windows or something along it. And so we just covered it with these things. It's like each one was something different. It's like, okay, if you could go anywhere, where would you like to go? Then the next one is, if you could do anything, what are the experiences in life you want to have? Do you want to go surfing? Do you want to go scuba diving? Do you want to go mountain climbing? Like what are the things you want to do? Mm-hmm. And then there was like limitations. Like, what do we need?
Right.
Well, we have to have internet connection, a good internet in order to work. We have to have these things. So, and then I can't remember what all was on all of them, but it ended up like listing all these things and all these places. And so we started trying to connect. Okay, this place has these 5 things and it has these things, but we can't go there because of this one thing or whatever. Like, it was trying to figure out the location. Mm-hmm. And it narrowed it down a bit, but it was like,
because it was a wildest dream board. Really.
Oh yeah.
It was like your wildest dreams. Yeah. Like, what do you want to see? It's like, I want to be in like the safari and I want to go scuba diving and like just their wildest dreams. And we're talking kids between the ages of 8 and 15, you know? So it's like anything, just throw it up on the wall. And that went on for a couple hours. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you're the one that said it at the end. We're like, what are we going to do? Like, what would we pick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then someone had the audacity to say,
you,
well, why don't we just do it all for a short amount of time and figure out where we want to land? Because if we're going somewhere, because the plan was to go somewhere for good.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Let's try it all and see what we like.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this is a stupid idea. And it felt right. Mm-hmm. It felt like, okay, let's do that then. Mm-hmm. So now what do we do?
Yeah.
Now we find a place for our stuff to land.
Let's take it back from on its field trip and bring it back to
Alberta. Yeah, it's done its vacation. So we call the moving company. They load it back up. They ship it back to Calgary.
Yeah.
To your parents' house, because they had the acreage at the time and it had a huge garage. And they're like, just stick it in the garage while you figure out. It's like, okay. And so then offloading all of these boxes, sticking them in the garage. And then it's like, okay, what are we going to do with all this? Are we just going to store it?
Yeah.
Like, we just paid
$10,000 or whatever it was, $15,000 to take our
stuff on. Just to take it on a field trip. Yeah. So it's just like, and we're going to store it?
Yeah.
For what, a year? And then come back to it? And it's like, well, let's try to
pare it down.
Get it down to only what we need.
Yeah.
Only the stuff we love. So our table makes it, you know, a few other things. And it was just, it was a lot of stuff that made it.
A lot of stuff made
it. All the pots and pans and all the things. Like, yeah, we're going to need those one day. And it's like, over the years, we keep visiting this pile of stuff that keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
Down to like a corner of my parents' basement now.
Yeah. But at the time,
but it was
a lot to go through, you know, 192 or 28 boxes, and our family like coming there and going through all of our stuff with us, our kids, and like that overwhelming feeling of just like, we're doing this again. Like, I just did this. Mm-hmm. And we're you coming in there and like, how are you doing? And I just break down and be like, I just did this though. You know, and having to like, and I loved, the thing is I loved what we had there. It felt like maybe I was holding on to the idea of keeping what we had and part of the home feel that we had was because of what we had to put into the space to make it feel that way. Like, we had these tufted chairs that always comes up because I love tufted chairs, and it was on either end of our gorgeous table, and it was a place that you and I would meet every morning and have tea together. It was a place that I would write in, and it just like, it felt like, like letting those tufted chairs go is like letting, I just remember just crying. It was like letting go of one of my friends, you know, because I had spent so much time and so much of me had unfolded in those chairs, so much of discovery and like growth and meals and conversations and tea and books. Like,
but that it holds space for those things.
Totally.
Right? Like, it's just, it's a placeholder. It's like when someone loses a loved one.
Yeah.
Right? And they hold on to their thing, whatever the thing was.
Yeah.
And then one day they lose that thing.
Yeah.
So that's when they actually lose the person.
Yeah.
Right. Because you put all this affection and this romanticized idea of memories being mm-hmm. attached to things, and they're not.
Yeah.
Well, they act as triggers and they can hold you, but it gives you something to hold on to.
Totally.
And so yeah, I get that.
That was hard.
That was hard.
That was really hard. And we did that all really quickly. Once we decided.
Yeah.
We went back to Calgary. We sold a bunch of our stuff. I remember seeing like our friends like haul out with things and just being like, there it goes, you know, and just seeing people. It was great because the people that we loved, but seeing them love things that we had, that had held us so well in our own space. And then it was, I believe it was September 4th. We set off to our first place.
Scotland.
Yeah. We got smoking good deal on flights and we didn't have no clue where we were going except for our first destination. And we went to Scotland.
Everybody got a backpack and half of a carry-on.
Yeah. We were minimalist. We were like, this had to make sense to me. Right. Yeah. I was like, we had to have gone through this for it to be
a reason.
Yeah. Like what's the reason?
Yeah.
So I remember like finding this couple on Instagram, Bucket List Family, and they sold other things and they like became really like, people were following them and that became their source of income. I was like, well, maybe that's what this is about. So I was like, well, what kind of story do I want to tell? Oh, I want to be like, I think we should travel minimalistly. And I think we should be buying the clothes ethically. And we should be only buying or buying recycled clothing. And so I can just remember this. We got rid of clothes that we loved. I don't even know why we did this. Well, I kind of know why, but we got rid of clothes that we loved. Because we wanted to replenish with only recyclable clothing or clothing that was made ethically.
Mm-hmm.
And so we basically had 10 things. It was like a wardrobe that could be intermixed anyway. It could be dressed up. It could be dressed down. The kids all had, I think, a pair of shoes or two. And it was all, everything was recycled clothing. And I remember actually like sending letters out to businesses being like, do you want to sponsor us in this? And like, I had no idea what I'm doing. I'm just trying to make sense of this chaos. And I think it was actually a big distraction of like my grief.
Try to become an influencer with no following.
No following. And like, I'm going to do this. This is great. And it's going to make a lot of sense. And I don't know how, but it will, you know? And it's something I felt like I really wanted to do in order to make sense of the chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt really embarrassed too. Like it was humbling to be.
Yeah.
Like
I'm a criminal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like for doing nothing, for following their rules, you know. And then you're just like, it makes sense of this. I remember when we left for Scotland, I was so nervous that we were going to get booted out on entry. I was like, what if they don't let us in? What if they don't let us in? You're like, relax. I'm like, they're probably not going to let us into the country. Just being so scared, so much trauma.
Yeah.
And just that constant feel of fearing that something was going to go wrong mm-hmm. again. And then once we got past that and we were in our place in Scotland, in Edinburgh, waking up in like sweats, mm-hmm. just being like, where am I? You ever woke up when you're in your house as a kid, especially this happened to me, and you wake somehow during the night.
You turned around in the night,
you're at the foot end of the bed, and you're like,
you can't figure out
where am I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was I captured?
Yeah.
Someone kidnapped me.
I don't recognize this, right? And that's how I felt many, many mornings in Scotland, be like, whoa, where are we? Oh my gosh, we have no home. We have no car because we sold our car too. Mm-hmm. We rented our dog out. No, we let somebody we love take care of our dog. And it was just like that old shit moment. Like,
yeah.
For weeks. Like it was like my body was in Scotland, but my head had not caught up with all the things that had happened. So I was living in two different places. One was like, wow, look at these castles and these streets. And the other part of my head was like, wow, we have no car. We have no house. Like what just happened? And trying to make sense of any of this. And it didn't make sense to do the traveling. People were like, what are you doing? You know, like you have a family. How long are you going to be able to do this for? And we're like, I don't know. It feels like the next right decision, but man, that was the days in Scotland and the fear of like, of losing you or of something else going wrong. Like I was stuck in this like bit of a wheel of, oh shit, we're going to die.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's like all the things that you measure success in life by.
Yeah.
Right? Like the house and the car and the things that you put in the house and the car and the stuff you tow behind your car to go to your cabin to do like all the waypoints that society gives you as success.
Yeah.
Was all gone.
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
And like, you had half a suitcase.
Yeah.
to yourself.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Mm-hmm. And we wouldn't even let ourselves buy stuff because we had a rule. Like, if you bought something, you had to get rid of two things so that we could keep it minimal.
Yeah.
And like all of our toothpaste and hair products, it was all like barred, the bars, so that we didn't have to buy it everywhere we went and we could continue to use it. It wouldn't be something that would, we never checked a bag. Everything was a carry-on.
Yeah.
We never had any liquids with us. And so like we traveled so lightly and very, very seldom added stuff to the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was interesting going shopping.
Yeah.
We're not shopping, just wandering around being like, I love this thing. But on what am I going to do?
Yeah.
What am I going to get rid of to carry around this?
Yeah.
So you don't get it.
Yeah.
So it's incredibly liberating in one sense, but like very different programming.
Very like reprogramming.
Unlearn all the things. It's like, because these are the things you do to have security. But security can be removed from you like that.
Yeah.
You need to experience that. So like security itself is just an illusion. And it's just waking up to that reality and all the waypoints, the things that you used to hold on to, just dissipating and going away.
And doing life completely different because I love a good dollar store and I love a good craft and I love going to the secondhand shop. So my programming is just like, oh, let's get this cute little game or like, oh, this would be a great picnic blanket. Like just like, you don't realize how your mind is working when you're going out. You go to the dollar store and like, oh, these are really cute. This would organize my cutlery. You know, like you just don't realize the little micro purchases that you make that take up a lot of your time.
Yeah.
And now you're in a place where you don't buy anything. Like you just don't, other than maybe sometimes buying a candle or something for an Airbnb.
Sometimes buying a candle?
Always buying a candle. That's true. I think I bought them a candle. Many candles. Okay. So my splurge on the traveling has been candles because you can burn those and you don't take them with you. And I love candles always. Yeah. I do buy candles a lot. It's my thing, but you can burn it and you have that timeline and then you don't bring it with you. So it was a big program shift in my brain. This idea of seeing all these, and you're in Europe, you're in Scotland.
Right.
You're like, it's not just like things you would find at home. It's you're like, oh my gosh, like such unique and different things that you, and when you go on a trip, typically, I mean, most of us who go on a vacation, we know we're coming back with stuff, right?
Right.
And this was like, we don't know how long we were going. We anticipated maybe a year.
One of the dreams I had before we started traveling was like to go on a trip with empty bags. Remember?
Yeah.
I told you this. I was like, let's just go on a trip, empty bags, and then we can fill them up with new stuff and bring it back.
Yeah.
Like,
so great. Yeah. No.
That's going to make me happy.
It seemed to feel so good. No, we had our 10 items. I'm pretty sure it was about that.
Yeah.
And the truth of it is, typically you wear your 10 favorite things anyway. So that was easy, but it was hard to want to part with those things because you really did like the 10 things that you had. So the idea of buying some sweater, you're like, do I love it more than what I have though? And I don't think if it was one rare occasion, I think in Spain, I bought a pair of green pants.
There was
several pants. And a jacket.
And a jacket.
Yeah, jacket.
And a cashmere sweater in Scotland.
Yeah, that I still have.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But yeah, I think it was just the programming. And then from there, from Scotland, we went to London, right?
Yep.
And I was so scared. Do you remember you're like, let's go to this cute little place, cafe? And I was like, I'm pretty sure someone's gonna try to kill us here. Because we're living in an area that was so much graffiti. Like, they'd taken the buildings and all of the streets, basically, and there was just tons of graffiti. And
which for that area of London is common.
Yes. But for me, coming from Airdrie, 10 years, a little suburban area, that was huge for me. And I felt constantly at risk. So we're taking a break there because we wanted to split this up into two podcasts, part one and part two, and share about the time when everything changed, when we did move and things went awry and went haywire, and presented this crazy and amazing opportunity. But what we didn't know is the part that would change everything in the journey for us and amongst the traveling. And that's the part we're going to share in the next part of the podcast. So come back next week so you can listen to how the traveling actually changed us in ways we didn't expect or know until it just kind of showed up. Thank you so much for being here and for joining us. Look forward to you joining us again next week.
Thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcast goodness. This way you'll never miss out on any future episodes, plus it really helps us. And if you want to share your favorite episode with a friend, that would be absolutely incredible. This goes a long way. If you'd like to join Naked by sharing part of your story, just leave us a message on Instagram or email us at nakedwithjanelle@gmail.com. Also, a big thanks to my son, Mikkel, who is the best cheerleader and maybe one of the biggest believers in Naked, and also produces and edits all our podcasts. I am beyond grateful for him and very aware that I couldn't do this on my own. Thank you so much for tuning in and for being here.